Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th of February, Anno Domini 2011, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose.
And something you can use if you get your headset on.
And unfortunately, no booze. Yeah. I was a little late getting started here today. It's mildly ugly out there.
Well, we should warn the folks right off the bat, the webcam is not up.
Right. Dennis is here today taking the place of Steve.
Well, as much as I can.
Well, he did a capable and admirable job. A
couple of weeks ago, yeah.
So we're happy to have him doing it again here today. Is my mic on, actually?
Is my mic on?
Yeah.
I don't think
no,
I
you
am. Turn,
you turned yours off.
If you can hear us.
I turned mine off?
Yeah, I didn't.
Did anybody see my hand go near the mic switch? No.
I think you moved the mouse.
Because I couldn't see the light on.
Well, you know I can totally turn you off.
I know you can.
Well,
I know. All right, in case you didn't hear that, Dennis is sitting in for Steve, who's two steps ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest.
Again.
But I'm sure he'll be here next week because, you know, he'd rather do this than face the wrath of Dave. We're going to start. Of course, you can give us a call. Let me give you the numbers first. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. And stay tuned in a little bit, and I'll even have another number for you. But let's start out with the poll of the week from this series of news items. Apple laid out a new subscription service and broad rules cementing its power as gatekeeper for most of the digital content sold through the iPhone and iPad, setting up a battle with media companies that may be thrown off the device if they won't share revenue or cede control of customer data. Some media companies criticized the plan, saying that the restrictions stacked the cards too much in Apple's favor. For instance, companies that sell digital content for Apple devices now will be compelled to make that content available for sale through apps at the iTunes App Store. Apple would take a 30% cut on any sale. So, if you sell any digital content for Apple devices, you must sell it through the iPads, through the iTunes Store.
Well, it's that you can sell it on your own and take 100%. And actually get the subscriber data. But Apple's rules are, if you do that, then you also must make the option available through the app itself.
Right.
And then at that point, Apple takes their cut.
Apple takes 30%. They also take the customer data.
Right. Yeah, you don't get that back. So when you think about all the junk mail you've gotten over the years that has come from the information you've given to magazine subscriptions and so forth and so on, all the publishing companies, Apple's going to keep that. So a lot of the revenue, the secondary revenue that all these publishers get, is actually through renting or selling your name on a list to other advertisers to send you junk into your mailbox.
Right. And people are getting really kind of nuts about this. George Colony, who's the CEO of Forrester Research, suggests that Apple is letting the success of its iPhone and iPad devices go to its head and that it risks massive hubris if it doesn't – I love the word hubris – if it doesn't dramatically lower the subscription fees it charges to publishers. Colony thinks that Apple is wildly overestimating the pricing of content on mobile devices and says the proper fee level for subscription-based services should be around 5%. By charging such high subscription fees for success, for access to the iTunes Store, Apple risks more developers being driven into the arms of rival mobile operating systems like Android, Colony argues. Apple's blowing it, he writes bluntly in a blog. It risks replaying the PC wars of the early 80s when Microsoft welcomed everyone into their development world while Apple stayed pure and scared away its allies. This time around, Apple's hostile position could result in a 2014 app internet market that looks something like this. 80% Android, 10% Apple, 10% other. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Google CEO Eric Schmidt unveiled Google's OnePass payment system for digital content, offering publishers a much better cut than what's recently been offered in the Apple Store. The move came just one day after Apple announced their new App Store subscriptions. Google's OnePass will only take 10% of the sales from publishers, which is really twice what Colony thinks, but only a sixth of what, well, a third of what Apple is taking.
Do they get to keep that publisher data, though?
And yes, OnePass lets publishers set prices and terms, and they keep their own data.
Okay.
And so the only thing you lose by moving over to Google instead of Apple
is much smaller market of devices, right?
So far.
Well, at the moment, Android is growing big.
Android is growing huge.
In fact, I think the growth rate for Android is much larger than
iOS.
Way
much larger, right.
So iOS has got a lot of devices.
The problem is Apple has reached the point that they've reached in the PC market, which is new sales are simply cannibalizing old sales. They're reselling into the same market.
How many people do you know that have an iPod Touch and then bought an iPhone and then got an iPad for Christmas and then their kids got an iPod Touch and then, you know,
right.
and so on and so forth?
Right. So it looks like multiple sales, but it's really to one person who's now kind of done.
Well, yeah. I mean, advertisers are only going to reach that one person or maybe that one family.
Right. Four times. But
well, I know that Mac sales in general are on the upswing.
Right.
In general, year over year, I won't say they've doubled, but I remember reading at their quarterly report that it was nearly doubled. It was like 60% to 80%
increase
year over year.
It's huge.
And that's actually bigger than the growth of the PC market in general.
Yeah. And that's why everybody wants into that market.
Sure.
It's just going to be huge. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is who do you think publishers will prefer? And the choices are they'll gladly pay 30% to Apple, they'll jump to pay 10% to Google, and they'll avoid both until the bite is only 5%. Now, we've...
drum roll?
Drum roll, please.
What do we got so far?
So far, we have 32 votes.
Okay.
69% of you think they'll avoid both until the bite is only 5%. 19% say they'll jump to pay the 10% to Google. And only 4 of you think they'll gladly pay 30% to Apple. I think that's very sweet. When you're done with that, because I know you'll have more to say, check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can enter your opinion on the poll. So far, we've got 30% of them. 30%, yeah. So far, we've got 5 of them.
The opinion.
Yeah, exactly. We've got 5 of them, and I know we'll have more shortly. And our question to you, of course, what do you think about all this? Give us a call. You don't have to ask us a question. You can give us your opinion on these news items. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Bodan did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Welcome, gentlemen. Hello, and greetings on a snowy Saturday.
I hope you're home safe, snug, and sound.
Yes, I am. I just finished a delicious cup of European-style hot chocolate.
Excellent.
Ooh, we'll be right over. No, probably we won't. It'll take half an hour anyway.
Now, if Dave had some rum balls, I'd bring some over for you.
There you go. Thank you.
Anyway, I might have to do some up. The problem, but I'm going to ask you, gentlemen, what would go wrong? Basically, it involves the program Skype, and I do use the video call program to call some of my friends who live on the other side of the pond, as we say.
Sure.
A new version came out, and it said, please upgrade your Skype to the latest version, and you guys always say, try to go with the latest version, go with the latest version. Well, when I tried to do a video call, I couldn't get the video. Everything worked except the video wouldn't work. I got a little pop-up box that said, can't start video renderer. Check that you've got the valid DirectX installation. And they explained a little more there, and I double-checked that, and I had the latest version of DirectX And son of a gun, I started looking at some of the forum pages where people were posting comments, and there's a help section and stuff like that. I wasn't the only one that was having video problems with the latest version of Skype. So they, one of the comments was, uninstall it, go back and reinstall the old version, which is version 4.20. And by miracle, I did that, and my video works fine. So the question that I would have, Nick, is why would a program like Skype or anyone else do an update and then all of a sudden have major problems where a crucial part of their operating system or the operation of the program is not working correctly?
Because it's very simple, and it's what it is, it's the various video drivers. Back in the old days, this is one thing we've lost sight of. Back in the day, when they were creating programs, there was just a few video cards and drivers. Well, now the multitude of cards and drivers that are out there and configurations, I mean, you could do anything from 640 by 480 up to, 1600 and above. There's so many different drivers and everything else that they have to work for, plus different cards. It's not surprising that once in a while, it won't work.
Okay. Well, basically, I did uninstall the later, their version 5.1. I went back to the version that I had. Everything works perfectly. I emailed them, telling them my story, and they said, "Well, they sort of wanted to blame me that it's like my fault that some of my either operating system wasn't up to date or whatever, which is possibly true with a 3-year-old machine, but still, I mean,
they're just looking to point the finger elsewhere, and get you off the phone.
What really happens is, and what we actually say is, you're safest to be a week or two behind,
right?
As opposed to being right on that cutting edge. When a new version comes out, wait a week, read the forum, see what it looks like, then make your decision. We really don't tell people to be the first one on the block to do this, unless you've got a machine that you're willing to be a guinea pig on.
Yeah. Well, we always say that you can always tell the pioneers they have the arrows in their back.
Exactly.
Hey, just one little final question in regards to this. What exactly is DirectX? Because I'm not familiar with it. I did double check it according to what they posted how to do it, and I was up to date.
Here's the deal. Back in the day,
way back,
Microsoft created an operating system they called Windows.
I've heard of that.
You've heard of it. And
really?
What they did was created a way to do graphics on the screen, which works fine, except it's too slow. And if you're going to do games. So what everybody did for decades was create their own driver set that went around Microsoft's graphics. It replaced Microsoft's graphics for the game and then put theirs back again when you were done with the game. That was dangerous and painful, and it meant hundreds of companies were recreating the work of hundreds of other companies. So they all prevailed upon Microsoft to create DirectX, which is essentially the same thing that the game companies were doing. It bypasses Microsoft's own graphics drivers with a different set of graphics drivers, which they eventually incorporated into the system, so that when you want to do something fast, you essentially dump the original Microsoft graphics out and replace it with the DirectX graphics.
All right.
It's much more complex than that. I look forward to your emails. But in essence, that's how it works.
All right. So I'll try Skype in a month or two and see if their latest version works with my computer. And if not, then I'll just keep the link to the old program version.
Well, watch the forums, because that'll tell you when it gets fixed.
All right. Hey, final question. The breakfast is, in a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
Big pancake breakfast?
That's right.
And do not wait.
I was going to say, you better get your tickets, because I'm not too surprised that it's going to sell out.
Well, I am thinking of treating a couple of my buddies to breakfast. And these guys, is coffee included? Because these guys are into
coffee, juice, sausage, great entertainment, and all the pancakes you can eat.
Well, I think I'll be buying my tickets in the next day or so.
Please.
Don't forget, when you buy them, stay there for sound bites.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Now, here's a brilliant idea that Bodan has just had, ladies and gentlemen. Be the BMOC. BMOB, Big Man on Breakfast.
That's good, too.
Ooh, buy a bunch of your friends breakfast. You don't have to tell them it's only $5.
Well, when they hear there's complimentary coffee, they're gonna be standing in line.
I'll be standing in line. I'll match them cup for cup.
Great entertainment.
And it's great entertainment and everything else. But this is the deal for everybody else. It's only $5. So call up a half a dozen of your friends and say, hey, I'm going to treat you to breakfast March 12th.
You can't go out for coffee.
And they'll think that I'm a big spender.
Exactly. That's the point. You've given me hours of great food and entertainment, and you bought it all? Bodan, heck of a guy.
That's right.
Thank you for that brilliant idea.
Stay warm.
You too, my friend. Keep
Thank
smiling.
You. And hopefully, by my me telling a story about Skype, I'm sure there's other people who use Skype now. Maybe they're running into the same problem. So, you know, maybe my comments will benefit someone else.
I hope so.
Hey, you never know.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. That really is a brilliant idea. Call up a half a dozen of your friends and say you're going to buy them lunch or breakfast.
Breakfast, too, yeah.
Breakfast, bring them over. Starts at 10 o'clock. Bring them over for breakfast. Here it is. All your pancakes you want, all the coffee, all the juice, all the sausage. And oh, by the way, we got polka music from 10 to 12 and sound bites from 12 to 2. You have to be there by 1. They stop serving at 1, but we'll be there until 2 so you can finish eating while you listen to us. In addition, of course, there is the reality that this breakfast will sell out. So if you haven't got your tickets now, get them now.
There is a limited number, and I think we're getting close to it because Ray was selling quite a few today. I mean, the polka guys are really going.
Yeah, and where are all you folks? We need you to step up. Go to jazz901.org.
Because, be honest with you, and Rob was pushing this in the staff meeting, getting the folks to sign up now because we'd hate to disappoint. Well, like on our 20th anniversary.
Right.
You know, when we had the party for there, a lot of folks said, oh, I'll just pay when I get to the door. We had to turn some folks away.
And you're
hungry.
It was
unfortunate, but, you know, I mean, especially since we're dealing with the school. Get your tickets now.
Only a certain number of people are allowed to be in that room.
Sure.
And you can hate us all you want. It's got nothing to do with us. It's school district rules, and we're not going to go against them because we don't want to get
kicked out.
Fire marshal and everybody else. So get your tickets now so you're guaranteed a seat.
Because here's what else folks have to realize. It's not only the sound bites and the polka show. All the other DJs are hopefully going to be there too. So
right.
If you've got, say, Otto or any, any of the other guys that are on during the week, they've been asked to come too. Joel and we're all going to be there that Saturday for this event. So, you know, not just meeting just us and the poker guys. Rob's going to be there, Laurel Ann, the whole cast of Jazz Point 90.1.
Yep.
So if you get a chance, get your tickets now. Don't wait.
Yeah, we'd hate to disappoint you. We'd hate to not see you because you didn't get your tickets on time. So do that.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 9.
Sorry about that one.
It was just Dave randomly. Dave, when you fall asleep,
you're right
don't
over there?
Fall asleep on the board. Apparently, we're going to. Have I got the 30-second out? Is that what I'm
You got it, dude.
All right, we're going to take a quick break back.
We'll get it together yet.
With Dave and
Rob's
David
out of town, so I don't have to worry.
Francesco and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have a. Would you read the. Text message.
I am.
That means I got to go on this Mac.
He's got to go on the Mac.
All right. Need help upgrading the virtual box on a Linux Mint computer. I'm still in the Windows mode when I installed VB to start with. It was part of the package. Just click to activate. Next one. I don't know how to use the download files from the virtualbox.org site. Sorry for the noob question.
So it sounds like he
and
went.
Who's that from?
This is from Jay Galloway 81.
All right, we're.
I'm assuming in sunny downtown Rochester.
I'm going to say Rochester.
Sunny as of yesterday.
Yeah, really.
All right, this is. I'm a little confused when you say you're still in Windows mode, because if you're in Linux Mint, you shouldn't be in Windows mode. But. Linux Mint is yet another version of Linux, right? And I believe you can install it right from the standard installation packages. So I don't think you have to download it from anywhere. I believe you just use your normal installer, whether you use apt-get at the or aptitude at the command line, or you use your software center. So you it should just install from there. From there, under well, I don't use Mint, but under Ubuntu, it's Applications Accessories for some reason. You get VirtualBox. Once you have that, this is where it gets a little technical, but I'm only going to go skim the beginning. Once you get VirtualBox up, you actually create a new virtual computer. And what you want to do is it leads you through all of this. You tell it how much RAM it's going to have, how many processors it's going to have, how big the hard drive will be, and you can make that a static amount of memory, or you can let it expand as it needs to. That's probably best, because then it'll take less on your machine.
Right.
Then you want to mount the CD, because now you've got a hard drive but nothing on it and no way to get anything on it. So you mount a CD. That's one of the other choices under VirtualBox. You'll see it on the right in the list. And you point the CD to the ISO you downloaded of what was he trying to install?
Whatever program Linux Mint on a Linux Mint.
Yeah, that's the host OS. But he didn't
virtual
say
box.
What the guest was.
Yeah, but he didn't say what the guest was. Whatever that guest is that you downloaded, you pointed to the ISO, the CD image that you downloaded from the other site.
Right.
You then say, okay, that's it, and you tell it can boot from the CD. You start it up. It boots from the CD, which essentially is the ISO, and the ISO says, oh, you want to install this? And you go, yes, and you install it. It installs on the virtual machine. You now shut it down. You turn off the CD, and you start it up again, and now you're in that operating system. But if you're going to do that, the nice thing about VirtualBox is it lets you install however many operating systems you want.
Right.
You just better have a lot of RAM, a lot of hard disk space, and an awfully beefy processor.
And we should maybe back up half a second and say VirtualBox is a class of program called a virtual machine environment. And there are plenty of others. On the Mac, for a few years, we've had quite a different selection of choices for doing this. And what it essentially does is it allows your physical computer, the one that's on your desk, to pretend to have other computers inside it so that you can have each one of those run your favorite OS. If you're a Mac guy and you need to run Windows, you can still do that. Or if you need to run Linux, or if you start with Linux,
the Mac people always come from the dark side over to our side.
Eventually,
the PC side has never gone over to that other side.
Yeah.
Well, a few have.
Because real men click twice and use a two-button mouse. They can handle it.
Oh, come on, guys. We've had two-button mice for generations. No, but the big problem is, in my world, if I want to run Mac OS, Apple's got this clause that's in their license agreement that says you have to run it on an Apple labeled computer.
Right. And it's not that we don't want to run Windows. We can't.
You couldn't if you wanted to, guys. So
right, right.
Yeah. Anytime, I'd love to buy some cheap hardware and put OS 10 on it, but Apple doesn't let me.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Further upgrade here. He is down in Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Well, that's too late now. I've already clicked.
Was he the guy looking for the Linux users group a couple weeks ago?
Well, he says, I'm an ex-Windows user. I don't know how to install software without an installer. I am trying to upgrade VirtualBox 3.12 to 4.04, which isn't available via the software distribution package.
Well, then don't upgrade it. Really. And I say that honestly, because the reality is that if they haven't, if the packagers of your version of Linux haven't upgraded it,
there's probably
right, that there's something in the new version that is incompatible with whatever version of Mint you're running. And that when they resolve those differences, then they will upgrade for you. And it'll be part of the standard. If you installed it through the standard package, they will install it for you. So if that is in fact the case there, do not upgrade automatically.
And we should tell Jim,
let it upgrade automatically. Do not upgrade manually.
Mm-hmm. And we should tell Jim, since he's down there in Altoona, check with his local stations down there and see about carrying sound bites so he can hear us live right down there.
Yeah, that'd
right.
be great.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks. Okay, that works out better.
Okay.
All right. Our next caller is Ray from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's your question?
Well, I'm an old
cowhand from the
digital world, and I'm struggling with trying to make a wireless connection. Here's the deal. Yeah. We're remodeling the basement, so I brought my wife's PC up to the second floor, and I talked to Frontier, who's my provider, and they told me that I needed to get a wireless USB adapter, which I did get, something called a Netgear N150.
Oh, yeah, nice product.
I installed the software, put in the USB, mm-hmm. and I can't make a connection. Right. I have talked to Frontier. I talked to a Daniel for 35 minutes, then talked to a Mike for 45 minutes, then I talked to an Eric for 25 minutes.
All right, hold on.
And then I switched out the...
Ray.
Hang on.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I switched it out with a new one, and I still have the same thing. I can't get up here. But if I use my MacBook up here, I connect just fine.
Perfect. That's exactly what I want to know. What you seem to be having is you're trying to connect directly to the wireless modem from your internet service provider, right?
That's right.
All right. It is very likely that that internet service provider does not provide N as a choice. You have B, G, and N as the three common choices in wireless. If the Netgear N150 only does N, you will never connect to that machine.
Okay. So what do I need to get? That's what I want to know. I got to make this work because my wife does some part-time work and all of her paperwork.
All you need is to – it says it's backwards compatible with G. So I'm not entirely certain what the problem is. When you set up your laptop up there, did you set it in exactly the same place?
Well, it's within 3 feet of it.
Okay.
Maybe.
That's enough to make a difference.
We're only
about 14 to 15 feet away from the modem.
Right, which what we often find is if there is, for example, a heat run between her and the cable modem downstairs or
you mean a metal duct.
Metal duct.
Yeah.
You may be to one side of it, she may be directly over it.
And it makes essentially a shadow as it projects the signal.
Right. So what I would suggest you do is you take your little laptop and start walking
it right now.
Over her machine. If in fact she still has the problem, then you need to look at the Smart Wizard software that came with it.
Yep.
And see if it
you guys really are on top of all this.
Yeah.
We do try.
You need to check the software. Because here's where I don't know, because I didn't have a problem when I set up my wife's.
The MacBook connected. It's right. They're side by side. They can't get any closer. They're kissing.
Move it over it.
Over the top of it?
Yeah. See if you lose the connection.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Well, the monitor is on top of the...
Well, all right, never mind that. Here's the deal. Check the software on the for the Netgear and see if in fact, because there should be software that tells you which radios are on in the Netgear router, and if they've turned off G, if the software turned off G, then you won't connect. So you would need to re-turn on G.
All right, so I'll put the install disk back in and see what I can find.
Right.
And
the
I
other thing
sure
you shouldn't have to install the install disk.
No, you shouldn't. You should be able. There should be software already under programs.
Okay.
Yeah. And
the
go
other
in there.
Thing you should try is a different USB port.
I did that. I've tried three different ports.
Okay. The other thing that I did for my wife's connection was I actually ended up buying a USB extension cable,
sure. mm-hmm.
so that I could move it out of its own shadow
yep.
and out of the shadow of the monitor.
Right.
Of course, she was my DSL modem is upstairs, so that was a little bit different. But even so, it was enough to make a difference. If she, mm-hmm. in fact, if she puts it on one side of the table, she doesn't get a signal. She puts it on the other side of the table, she gets a great signal. Let me suggest that you try those things next.
Okay, so I will.
And absolutely, let us know.
And there's also a little extension cradle that came with this, so I'll try that too.
There you go.
Okay,
let us know.
Okay, guys, I hope that this week you can all find a warm beach where you can go and study anatomy.
Exactly.
Have a good one.
Good to
take
me.
Care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. That was...
Wireless is tricky. Wireless. I mean, I'm always a big fan of copper. If you can do it in any manageable way, you know, I trust a wired connection.
I love the idea of wireless. I love the freedom of wireless.
Right.
And you know, in clement weather, I will go sit on my porch and work.
Sure.
You know, I love being able to do that.
I've done it from the front yard. Nice
right.
lawn chair.
Right.
Under a shade tree.
Before the mosquitoes come out, I'll go sit by my pond.
Sure.
I love doing that, but it can be a son of a gun to set up. It really can.
Well, it's very challenging. I mean, I got the end down the basement. I'm lucky enough that, because I've got an old home. I mean, it's built in 1928, the old lath and plaster and all that stuff.
Sure.
But I'm still able to get a good signal upstairs on the second floor.
Well, we have the exact same problem. Yeah. In our library, my wife really wants her computer in the library. Really, really mm-hmm. wants it in the library. Unfortunately, that's a curved wall, so there's chicken wire inside.
Uh-huh.
And it's a Faraday cage. It's the one room in the house I can't get a good signal.
Right. What about a booster?
I have thought of that. I haven't done it yet.
When the chicken wire starts to get warm, you might be pushing a little too much power across it.
You see the glow. You see the glow coming from the side of the wall.
Get the Pringles can. And
right.
Yeah. All right.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, don't. I'll call Fred.
Okay.
One of my ex-minions, my minions are the students and full-time people who work for me at RIT. One of my minions
a loving
started
name.
A, yeah, exactly. One of my minions started has won contests for length of how far he can shoot a signal. He's the guy who created the Pringles can thing.
Nice.
He started a thing called, I believe it's wardriving.com, I believe, but I don't remember anymore.
Okay.
All right, our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I called the show last week with a problem I had, and I'd like to share with you, if I may, what I solved.
Awesome.
Excellent. Did we have anything correct to say at all?
Well, you didn't know what it was.
Ah.
Well, what happened was I had a beta flash drive that wouldn't open up on my new Windows 7 computer.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yep.
And what I did was I right-clicked on the drive did show up in my computer, but every time I clicked on it, nothing happened. So I right-clicked on it and clicked on Properties, and then there was a box that said Compatibility. And then it stated if you had problems with this program and it worked correctly on an earlier version of Windows, select the compatibility mode that matches the earlier version.
So XP?
And there was Windows XP Service Pack 3. I clicked on that and it worked.
Yeah, there's a
Hold on. This is just a flash drive or is there an auto-run program on it?
No, just a flash drive.
That doesn't make sense.
That really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because normally the only time you got to put it in different compatibility mode is on a very older programs. Older programs, when they're executing something, they know. Unless it was, unless that drive was formatted like FAT32.
Yeah, it was 32, and I got 64 right now.
No, it's FAT32. So it's an old.
Probably formatted FAT16.
Could be. Yeah, could
that
be.
That
would definitely
it.
Do it too. And then instead of NTFS.
Mm-hmm. Right, or even FAT32.
Yeah, most of them are FAT32 or NTFS
right.
now.
If it's FAT16, I'll bet that's exactly it. There you
go.
There you go.
That makes sense.
Thank you, Victor, for pointing out that we're idiots. No, thank you very much for calling
back. It's just something different.
We really do love it when people come and call back and provide the actual explanation.
Well, I was glad I didn't have to buy another flash drive.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sure.
Well, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. I don't want to talk over this because I like the song. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. And we are Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, before we get into other stuff, we have people waiting on the line. We'll get to you in just a moment. I have mentioned a couple of times on this show that Soundbites has their own Google Voice number. and that there are a couple of things you could text to it, weather, stocks, help, of course, to see what all the things are. Well, we have something new now. Our Google Voice number is 585-348-8255, 348-8255. And if you text that number with the word define, D-E-F-I-N-E, a space, and then an acronym, a technical acronym. I've only got about 10,000 acronyms in there, and they're all technical, not medical or anything else, at least not yet.
Okay.
It'll give you back the meanings of those acronyms. So,
cool. So it'll expand it out there for you?
It'll expand it out. It'll expand them out there for you. So if you give, if you text, define space and an acronym to 585-348-8255, you'll get back those acronyms. Sometimes there's more than one, so you have to pick the one you're actually thinking about. But we hear all the time that people reading articles, listening to something, watching something, somebody uses an acronym they don't understand.
Sure.
We're probably never going to put like medical acronyms in there or anything along that line, but we're certainly willing to put the technical acronyms in there. So, go ahead and go for it. And if you come up with one, that isn't there, put it in the forums.
Have you got, TLA in there?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Call it. See what happens.
I also want to remind folks that besides being able to, you know, go online and submit your questions and all that, and besides calling in, we also have it that you're out and are listening on the radio, seeing your car and that, or your wife's off doing something, or you're doing something, you can text us. And if you dial on your cell phone, 585-209-9010, you can text us right here in the studio. I've got it here on this one screen that I can pop up and see your questions and answer them right then and there. And you can just sit back and make one more way just to make your life that much more easier here at Jazz 90.1.
And in terms of that, you should have both the Jazz 90.1 text messaging system and the Soundbites Google Voice number text messaging system pre-programmed into your phone so you don't have to remember.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I've been able to I'm doing the Thursday night shows now from 6 to 9, and I want to thank all the folks that have been tuning in because my audience is really growing.
Good.
Which I'm pretty
proud. Yeah, four people listening now.
But, yeah, even including Rob's mom.
Oh,
wow.
So doubled then. Yeah.
Yep. But no, I've gotten some folks that are texting me. I even had a couple IMs and a couple call-ins, and I was really surprised that this one lady called about a particular artist that I didn't know if we had it in the library, but I'm still discovering a lot of this stuff in there. And sure enough, we did. I got it on for her, and she was happy as all get out. And, you know, that's what we're here. The station is so diverse and bringing us, you know, a show like ours, mm-hmm. and the poker show and everything else. It's a lot of fun. So if you get a chance, tune in this Thursday from 6 to 9. That's my shameless plug.
There you go. Nice. And we're going to go back to the phones right now. Our next caller is Larry from Webster, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I have a Canon scanner I've been trying to install on a Windows 7 laptop without success. I can't find a Twain driver that will be compatible with it. I've gone to the online forums, and people say, well, load the Vista driver or load the XP driver, and I've tried that, and I still haven't had success. I wonder if
what, do you know what model Canon that is?
This is a Canon 1230 flatbed scanner. It's probably, I would guess, 10 years old.
That might be part of the problem.
That's part of your problem right there.
We have bad news and good news.
Yeah.
The bad news is that may not be fully compatible. And Nick is quickly scouring the internet to find out details about it.
Yeah.
The good news is scanners have never been more affordable. So even if you needed to replace that, and 10 years is a pretty long life for a scanner.
Right. I like the scanner because it had the backlit cover so I could do film and slides.
Oh, sure. Transparency capabilities. Yeah. Even with those additional capabilities, scanners are remarkably affordable these days. I just spec'd one out not long ago for a client. What do you see online there?
Well, they say the best thing to do is to download the CanoScan D1230U driver version 6.1.1C, and good luck. basically.
Yeah, it'll either work or it won't. I'm like,
right.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
right. I'm sorry, but the reality is that Microsoft has gotten to the point where they're stopping any sort of support for the very, very old products.
Right. Canon has a hard time staying in business trying to support a decade-old piece of equipment rather than trying to sell you a new one, I guess.
Yeah,
that's,
I thought
that's unfortunate for us, but
yeah, right. I thought maybe a Twain interface was kind of a generic thing because the application installs okay. It's just the interface.
Right, right. No, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Yep. Sorry.
You saved me a lot of frustration.
Well, yeah. Except now you're gonna have to go out and buy another scanner. But
well, it shouldn't be. That's tough. Yeah. USB was still fairly new 10 years ago.
Yeah.
In general. And it doesn't surprise me that a lot of the interface things just aren't working. It's probably a USB 1. It may not even be a USB 2 scanner. So he's going to get a speed increase, too.
Right, when he buys a new scanner.
Right. Probably the way to go.
It's hard. I wish, you know, we could say, oh, here's this 40-year-old thing that's going to work. But okay.
So we got another caller there, Nick?
Yes, we do. We have Sebastian, who's calling from the U of R. Welcome, Sebastian. What's your question?
Hi. I am a visual and audio artist, and I'm looking for a tablet or a portable sort of product that I can take around and maybe do some work on. But I've been looking around, and nothing is very powerful. Do you think there's anything that might be coming out soon?
Well, it depends. What two things. What kind of work do you want to do, and what's your budget?
I don't know. I guess I mix a lot of music and video, and I understand that I wouldn't be able to do that on a tablet. But I'd like to be able to maybe review the stuff and maybe do a little bit of editing on it. My budget, whatever.
Wow.
Budget is big.
Not limited.
That's good. Yeah. Well, why don't you buy me 8 or 9 of these things, and I'll test them for you.
We'll review them happily.
Yeah. There's two things here. If you want to take video, there isn't anything out there that has a really high quality camera in it.
No, it's more of the editing. I have a tower right now, which I do most of my editing on, but I can't take it anywhere.
Yeah, and that's the other part of the problem.
Editing's fairly involved and processor and sound card and video intense to do. We're starting to see, you know, in the Apple world, we've got the ability to edit video that you shoot on the iPhone, and that's still pretty early. I mean, that's only been out for six or eight months now. And in terms of doing that on a tablet, I suspect it's coming soon. I haven't seen anything that knocks my socks off in that area yet. How about you, Rick? Yeah,
No. There are a couple of online video editors.
Okay.
JCut is one. Video Toolbox is another. JCut.com, VideoToolbox.com. MovieMasher.com is another one. And those are helpful in that they actually edit at the other end. Right? So you upload all your video, edit it there, download the finished product. That's painfully slow.
Right.
But
and a bunch of extra hoops to jump through.
Particularly if it's a large, if it's a small video file, it's not a big deal.
So in terms of tablets, typically you've got a screen size of about, 8 or 10 inches or more, possibly. And then you've got a price tag of coming up on $1,000. And it's either going to run iOS for the Apple stuff, it's going to run Android for some of the others. And I guess there are still some Windows-based tablets around if you had to use that.
There's two. Go ahead.
What's up with these netbooks that are coming? Are there new phone that... plugged into a laptop?
Yeah, Motorola's got a new phone that does that.
The Motorola that plugs into the laptop. The laptop is really just a shell. All the power is in the phones. You're not going to get faster or more powerful by plugging it into the laptop. But if you're looking at a netbooks again are fairly small and
they're
not
designed
very
to be
powerful.
Yeah, powerful.
But if you're looking for a laptop that would do that, the high-end Sony Vaios,
sure,
Things like that would do it. They would probably be a little bit better. Certainly a MacBook Air.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. Take a look at the MacBook Air. I've gotten a chance to get my hands on that a couple of different times over the past few weeks. Remarkably high performance, especially if you get it with the SSD drive.
Now,
not terribly expensive. I think they're around $1,700.
Right.
Nicely loaded.
Now, the other good news for you, Sebastian, is that within the next few months, there's about 25 or 30 Android
right.
devices that are coming out. So if you can hold off a little bit and start testing those and looking at them and reading some reviews, you may find that one of the newer high-end devices will do what you want. Motorola is bringing out the Zoom X-O-O-M.
Right.
Lenovo has the Lenovo Pad or Leva. I don't remember what they call it. ViewSonic has the VPad 10. Those are all Android tablet devices. Like, I don't want to use the word iPad competitor, but they're an iPad type of form factor,
yeah.
Essentially. So you certainly could take a look at those. Some of them will have very powerful processors. The Motorola Zoom is supposed to have a dual-core processor in it.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
I hope the battery's good.
Well, right. You're not going to get huge battery life, but it'll do what he wants to do, and as long as he's somewhere near a plug, you can. I mean, the reality is that nothing is going to last terribly long if you're doing a lot of video editing anyway.
Yeah.
No battery.
If it's
is.
The kind of thing where you just want to be able to show off the thing you've made, you know, and you've done
any
the
one
video,
of those cables.
Any one of those will work. You know, even the $499 iPad will be just fine, or some of the even the less expensive stuff
right.
will play your videos if you convert that to MPEG or AVI or what have you.
Right. So I would start taking a look at the things that are about to come out. Like I said, the Motorola Zoom, which is spelled X-O-O-M, the VPad 10 from ViewSonic, the Lenovo, whatever it's going to be called. And take a look at those. They're much higher end processors, lots of RAM, et cetera, and you may find that those are better for your intended use. Then it's a matter of finding software to do it. And frankly, I've never looked at the software at editing apps.
Right. Well, yeah, video editing on Android, maybe. iOS, it's going to be limited.
I'll just wait for those to come out then. I'll see what they can do.
Yep.
Right.
Sorry.
Good luck.
But that's probably your best bet at this point.
All right, I should remind folks, as you know, not only great programs like Soundbites and the Polka Show and all the others, Jazz 90.1 gets into doing actually live concerts. Once a month, we have a live concert where we bring in a band. And this coming month, we have the White Hots. The White Hots are a local group here in Rochester, and Tina Albert is going to be here Wednesday, March 16th from 7 to 8. So, you know, if you want to listen to a great live, that's not pre-recorded, it's going to be a live concert right here in the Jazz 90.1 studio. Mark your calendar, March 16th from 7 to 8. The White Hots, like I say, they're a great local group. If you get to check them out, they play around town and that. They're really worth listening to, but we're going to have them here live, which not too many stations get into. I mean, most of the stations that you listen to, it's all pre-recorded stuff. We do it live here at Jazz 90.1.
What a great name for a local band.
Yeah, the White Hots.
I love
exactly.
it. I love
exactly.
it.
And they're good. I've played them Thursday night on my show a number of times, and they've got, I think, two or three CDs out, and they're fantastic.
I think by now everybody knows about White Hots and Red Hots around the country, but years and years and years ago I was down south. I stopped in at a restaurant, and I said, they said, what would you like to say like a Red Hot? The lady said, a Red Hot what? I said, a Red Hot hot dog.
Yeah.
She said, all our hot dogs are red hot. So, just give me a hot dog, lady.
Oh, when I was stationed out in San Diego, I had my uncles ship me out some White Hots because, you know, a bunch of my buddies out there.
Who ever heard of
never
them?
Heard of it.
Never heard of them. They go, what? That's not natural. I go, Red Hots. Yeah. No, these are called porkers.
Right.
Yeah.
White Hots. No, you're wrong. They got to be something else. I said, tell you what. So he literally put them in a container, dry ice, shipped them out there. And they couldn't get over it.
Oh, and their porkers are tasty.
And that's before you could buy them online now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now you can get them online.
He goes, gee, do you think you'd send us more? Because we had that cookout. It was
right.
You know, here we got all these other hots and hamburgers in it, and they weren't eating those. They literally, 24 White Hots.
Gone. Yep.
These four guys polished them off.
Yeah. I understand
Whoa.
That. I understand
Another
that.
Thing that's hard to get in California, good... barbecue wing sauce. Just getting wing sauces is tricky.
Yeah.
Had to send some of that out.
Yeah. Chicken wings.
Man, I got stories about the Anchor Bar in Buffalo that I cannot tell on the air. Never mind.
Okay.
Really, never mind.
All right, then.
TMI?
I think I'll read a news item. That'll
TMI?
Probably be a good
Might be
idea.
A good time
yeah.
for that, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think I'll read a news item.
Something you don't want to bring.
Right. The Ooh. Largest solar flare in several years has disrupted some communications, though it was not in the right position to create auroral displays visible from lower latitudes. The flare, which erupted on February 15th, sent what is called a coronal mass ejection, or CME. That's not, by the way, one of the acronyms that you can get from the Soundbites Google Voice number. Towards the Earth, the CME is billions of tons, billions and billions of tons of charged particles, mostly protons. When the charged particles come close to Earth, they're forced to move along the magnetic field lines, creating the auroral displays and radio interference. Huh. And worst case, they can damage electrical systems. This CME hit the Earth's magnetic field under just the right conditions, or the wrong ones, I suppose. What they did was they caused a bunch of problems over in China. But here, really, only some telegraph systems were damaged. And flares are classified according to how powerful they are, A, B, C, M, or X. X being the most powerful, and the February 15th event was a Class X. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, you have you've only wasted half of your time with us. We have another hour.
Yeah, but it's cold out. I mean, hello, compared to yesterday.
Yeah.
And when I woke up to this morning, one, I had to literally shovel leaves by my back door.
Remember leaves?
Last week.
No, this morning.
This morning. Yeah, because
yeah, because the wind and then it cyclones them.
Whipped it up.
And as it was, I woke up and my head thumped up. I go outside and I'm sitting there shoveling leaves. Yeah, because this, with all the leaves blowing around, cycloning, and then the snow falling on it.
Sure.
It made a real nice big pile. So I grabbed the shovel and I just threw it underneath the porch. I figured I'll deal with that come spring.
Right. Yeah, in less than 24 hours, we had a temperature drop. And I don't know what the official like NOAA temperature was, but I used a little thermometer in my car when I'm driving around. The one.
Yep.
So I noticed a temperature drop in less than 24 hours of over 35 degrees. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, Rochester, made for living, right?
You're right.
Hey, Thursday night, it was last Thursday, not this past Thursday, Thursday before that, I'm doing my show. And it was actually warmer out at the airport than here in Greece. And I'm thinking, all right, I'll go out to the airport and sit.
Ain't that the truth?
It doesn't usually happen that way.
Sit on 2-4 right. And
at the airport right now, it's 19 degrees.
Yeesh.
We
19 here in beautiful downtown Greece.
See that right there? Now it's the same. A couple people have been talking about how they liked the online texting thing for the three-letter acronyms.
Okay.
Apparently it is. And so that works. And then they were talking about eating at Campy's.
Oh, Campy's. Steak Bomber.
Wait a minute.
Steak Bomber with Campy's? Mushrooms and cheese.
I'm not hip to this. What's
Campy's? Oh, holy mother of
Campy's is by the airport. Scottsdale
Road. Pushing me out the door, guys. Come on.
They had a roll that had to be 12 inches in diameter.
Okay.
It was called the Bomber.
Yeah.
And I literally, when I worked nights or I was programming, we'd get one of these bombers. It was good for two meals.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You could sit there and cut this roll in half, and then they'd stack it up with all the steak, because I'd have the steaks, mushrooms, and cheese. And it smelled all the way good going to work, and it's like, yeah, I'd have to get to work, and I'll have just a little bit of 1/4 of the sandwich. Mm-hmm. The bomber was gone by the night that it was going to get two nights meal out of it. Didn't happen.
Oh,
they were great. I think they still make them. If you get off at Scottsdale Road,
Okay.
And you head north.
All right.
It's just as you're making the left-hand turn, head north, you'll see it there on the right-hand side. It's called Campy's. And the best, they're there as far as I know, and
they were still there a month ago when I went last.
Steak Bombers.
You should go after the show so they can give you a free one for the nice plug you just gave them.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't be talking about them anymore. But
we're just talking about products. Food.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
That was always good stuff. We used to eat there all the time. A friend of mine, we'd sit there, three or four of us, and I'm a big guy, but still, an entire Steak Bomber is a lot of food.
Yeah, it were.
And we had one guy would take all the leftovers from all of us,
sure,
and just pound it all down, and he was always like this thick, you know. If he weighed 80 pounds,
he's
he had
a rail.
Bombers
yeah.
in his pocket, right?
Well, that's like me. I was down. That's back when I was weighing 120 pounds, and
last time I weighed 120 pounds, I was 8. All right. So shut up.
I'm not going to say.
He's shaking his head, ladies and gentlemen.
At least my bald spot isn't blinding anybody this time because we don't have the camera.
That's right.
And I wore my hat.
You did wear your hat even though we don't have the camera. Okay. I keep telling you, don't call it a bald spot. It's a solar panel for a sex machine.
Don't go.
Look at the red.
You've forgotten that.
Look at the red.
All right.
Careful now. All right, Nick, I want you to dial 9-1 and then hover your finger over the 1 again.
Yeah, right. Well, while Dave gets his breath back, I'll read another one. You'd forgotten that one, didn't you?
Breathe, Dave. Breathe.
Yes, you had. All right, here's both, I suppose.
Although I did tell Sam and Dan about it. Yep. They had a good one on that, too.
My goodness.
You'll be remembering it now.
Careful.
Dave is done for the day. We don't know what we're going to do about any of these. If anybody calls in, and you can, it's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. He's not going to be able to answer the phone.
Solar panel.
See? There you go.
No, it's the image.
Exactly.
Because you remember, I've seen you in a dress.
Yes, you have. I've got good
game. This show just took a real weird turn.
Well, no, I'll explain. Yeah, Paul's going, what the hell? No, Nick did theater. And one time I went to see this one production. It was him and another gentleman doing this play. Yep. And Nick was doing a multitude of different characters. And one of his characters, he literally came out in this house dress.
Yep.
Okay.
It was Greater Tuna, for those of you who know the play. That's two people. They play about 140 characters.
Yeah.
And
it was great. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. We had a great time. That was me and Mark Almakinder. We had just a great time, and we play both male and female characters, and we come out, and it's, 2 second changes backstage.
Oh,
we had more dressers backstage.
Yeah.
We had audience members some nights, but it was quite amazing. It was a great show.
I got this mind for useless information, and that's just one thing that stuck in there. That I just remember that it was such a great time that evening. Laughed our butt off. It was hilarious.
Sure, me in a dress. How can you not be happy?
Yeah, it stuck in my mind.
Exactly. All right. Corporate IT departments are increasing their spending on hardware and cloud services, but not on new hiring in this weak economy. These trends are all revealed in government data surveys and in earnings reports. Cloud-based services in particular are expected to see a spectacular market growth this year. IDC is forecasting that public cloud services revenue in the U.S. will grow nearly 24% from $14.2 billion in 2010 to $17.6 billion in 2011. The problem with that, of course, is that none of this spending is helping IT hiring, at least not yet. According to U.S. government labor data, unemployment among IT professionals, and I hate to tell you this, is exceeding other professions. Unemployment for computer programmers, for instance, finished at 5.7% last year compared with 2.2% in 2007, according to the government data. Now, the Hackett Group is expecting IT employment in corporate IT departments to decline slightly this year by 0.4% after declining 1.1% in 2010 and 7.3% in 2009. Its projection is based on its annual survey of U.S. and European companies with revenues of $1 billion or more. 185 companies responded to that. Companies have been consolidating their IT resources, which is also spurring hardware buying. A goal is to make their IT organizations more flexible, and by doing so, gain capability to use resources globally, whether it's in the cloud or offshore. IT firms were asked to rank their strategic priorities. Cloud computing ranked at number 4 this year. So our question to you, is your company going to the cloud? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, I've got nonstop clients that are always asking me, how do I stop hosting my own email? How do I stop paying for calendaring services and everything else? And, you know, RIT has gone completely Google for all the students, and a number of my clients have all gone that way, too, because it's just one less thing to worry about. And the prices they charge, it's like $1 a week per user. And it makes complete sense.
It's ridiculous not to do it. You know, if you've got 20 employees, it costs you $20 a month.
A week.
Yeah. $20 a week to for your email.
Spam-free email.
Everything. Mm-hmm. Word processing, spreadsheets, everything.
Right. Yep.
Calendaring.
Yep. It's all backed up.
They worry about backup. They worry about the machines running all the time. All you need is an internet connection.
And you're good anyway. You're good anyway.
And here's the best in credit cards. And here's the best part about it. You work at work. You can work at home. You can get these things on your iPad or on your phone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you can do all of that stuff wherever you are, wherever you are.
Yeah. We've gone from USB drives, floppies to USB and USB to things like Dropbox, where you can just upload as much stuff as you want and just have it be there. You can get at it from wherever you need to be. It's really grown. So everything from file sharing with Dropbox, backup with Mozy and Kinetic D and Carbonite and all those other vendors, local places that will actually, they'll spin up, get this, they'll spin up a full Windows computer that you don't have to have anything but just a silly, simple client at your house that just knows how to find the internet. It connects to the machine downtown. It shows you a screen in front of you that looks just like a Windows machine, but suddenly you don't have to deal with the hard drive crash. You don't have to deal with backups, and you don't have to deal with anything else.
I have a virtual Windows machine at work because I run Linux on my desktop.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a virtual Windows machine so I can connect into the corporate calendaring system, which is Exchange and all of that stuff.
Right.
And that just runs on my desktop, and nothing bothers me. Nothing stops it. Nothing makes it do anything different. It just works all the time. It's always up. It's always running. I connect to it from work, from home, from anywhere I want to be, and it works. I can do the same thing with a Linux box. I can't do it with a Mac. I can't create a virtual Mac like we talked about earlier, but I can create Windows machines all day. I can create Linux machines all day. We've got faculty who are using it in classes, students in order to teach, for example, database management.
Mm-hmm.
We spin them up a small machine with MySQL on
it,
and it's yours to run for the quarter.
Right.
If you screw it up, you're not screwing up mine because I'm on a different VM.
Right.
Right. And then
at the end of the class, you tear it down.
Tear it down. It's gone. If they've screwed it up somehow, if they've managed to put a virus on it, which is pretty hard to do, all the other stuff that they could do, we don't care. It dies. It's gone. We're over.
Sure. Yeah, or you could nuke it and replace it.
That's exactly it. And we've done that. We've had to do that because we separate the server from the data.
Mm-hmm.
So if you screwed up the server somehow, we spin you up a new version of the server, and you still have your data because it was saved elsewhere.
Right. So how it all works. Nick, how do you think that's going to trickle down into the Dave?
That's okay. Dave clearly has something more important to say than
tell him another joke, Nick.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, get your kitties, get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair because he's clearly already awake and interrupting us. It's Story Hour with Uncle Dave.
Well, it's right on there with a lot of the stuff that's going on and people not having patience.
Mm.
And it's getting me
like you not waiting till we're
yes, and that's just what I mean. Just it's perfect, and that's why I wanted to get it because you know what, my crystal ball is broken, and it's
yours
people
too.
Yes, and what I'm getting around this is people, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with it too. When you or even you, Nick, you give guesstimates of when things are going to be done.
Oh yeah, I do my best, but.
Yes, but when you have somebody calling 6 and 8 times a day interrupting what you're trying to do to get their machine going.
Right.
And then they're wondering why it's not ready. I'm sorry, I would give you a guesstimate on how long it's going to take.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, well, you said it should, might be ready. Keyword, might.
Sure.
But yet they keep going, well, I hate to bother you. Well, then don't. We'll call you when it's ready. And then they get ticked off because you're, you know, well, you know, I wasn't talking to you. I could be working on it.
Yep. You got to set the expectations when they drop it off of, you know.
Well, that's what we do. But I mean, you just get some folks that just don't want to let go. And they just say, just because you tell them, well, we'll try to have it ready. I say, poor Sam, she was getting nailed. Boom, 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 boom. And they're getting porky. Cause she goes, yes, we'll try to get it done. And, but that they keep calling and interrupting, you know, well, we're trying to work on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know.
You need to institute a policy.
My crystal for those
people. You need to institute a policy for those people. The first call is free. The second call is $10. The third call is $20. The fourth call is $30, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you call.
Good point.
You're taking time away from me working on your machine. I'm adding that to the cost of the repair.
I mean, that's why I had to lead into this. It's like that. You know, I mean, you're in the middle of something, you know, and that's the whole thing. It's not that I can't, you know, shift gears, but when you're in, excuse me, into something and really getting into the, you know, the thoughts of mm-hmm. trying to fix something, right. You're focused and all of a sudden
rings.
You got to stop.
Right.
And shift gears like that just to answer a stupid question and then get back into it. Cause like we can be in the shop. I can have three different machines going
mm-hmm.
and working on it. And I, you know.
You got your flow?
Yeah, I got the flow going and I know I got this and this and this one and going. And then all of a sudden they call to ask, well, is it ready yet? Boom. It's like, okay, now where was I? It's like, shoot.
Yeah. There have been studies about that. It takes a solid 10 minutes to get back into that flow. So.
Yeah.
That times the three machines you're in front of.
Well, I'm sure the same with you, Nick. I mean, that's got to happen to you with the students and everything. You know, you're in the middle of doing something, and all of a sudden, well, these other professors, because their problem is certainly far more important than right. what you're doing
right.
for somebody else. And it's like, that's a good idea.
I have learned to close my door.
I don't have one.
I know. You don't have
I mean, the only door they can, Sam and Dan can do is tell me to go into the bathroom.
Yeah, right.
Well, the only other thing you can do is I think about things like UPS or FedEx where you get a tracking number so that they get some kind of unique number that they can have, and then somehow they use that to get information from some system that keeps track of where you are in the process. And again, that has a lot of overhead.
Then you got to do updating.
Right. Because I've thought about that, too. We do that. At Saunders, mm-hmm. when we actually do something, we update their trouble ticket,
sure.
and that sends them an email.
Okay.
Okay. The problem is that means that you have to stop whatever you were doing and update the trouble ticket.
Yeah, it's a little bit overhead.
It gets to be a certain amount of overhead. It certainly is helpful to people when their stuff is taking a long time.
But the thing is, you get to do that while you're in the flow of the project rather than having the phone ring and having you
incorporate that into your flow. Right.
So thank you for bearing with me, but that was a perfect lead in.
And I fully understand that we can't go back to our conversation now. It's done.
I don't even remember what we were talking about.
I do, but it's gone now. The whole minute is gone. So
the thrill is
we're done. All right.
Okay.
We got time for another news item?
Oh, yeah.
Go for it.
Three U.S. senators criticized for passed legislation that would allow the president potentially quarantine or shut down parts of the internet during a major cyber attack have introduced a new bill that would put limits on that authority. Welcome to America. The Cybersecurity and Internet Freedom Act, introduced late Thursday, would explicitly deny the president or other U.S. officials the authority to shut down the internet, assuming they could do that anyway.
How?
The legislation, similar in many ways to a controversial 2010 bill, comes after persistent criticism that the bill's sponsors want to give the president a so-called internet kill switch. Pay attention. The same guys who put together a bill that said the president should be able to kill the internet are now putting together a bill that says the president should not be able to kill the internet. Never mind whether it's technically possible. The reality is that these guys have now put out two explicitly contradictory bills.
And how much time did they waste on it?
Same guys.
Who paid him to draft the first one, and who paid him to draft the second one?
Exactly. I will not subject you to my Senator Joe Lieberman vocal stylings, but Senator Joe Lieberman, who is a Connecticut independent, said we want to clear the air once and for all. There is no so-called kill switch in our legislation because the very notion is antithetical to our goal of providing precise and targeted authorities to the president. Furthermore, it is impossible to turn off the internet in this country. Whoo, Joe, you get it.
He's won.
He's been told.
In 2010.
Al Gore informed him?
He must have. Can't turn off my internet. In 2010, the bill's sponsors, Lieberman, Maine Republican Susan Collins, and Delaware Democrat Tom Carper, introduced a wide-ranging cybersecurity bill that would have defined emergency powers that the president could use, including shutting down parts of the internet when there's an ongoing or imminent cyber attack on the nation's critical infrastructure. The new legislation...
Wait a minute. What part of the nation's critical infrastructure is connected to the public internet, and why?
All of it, essentially, because they move stuff. They don't know that they're not... They don't know how to not connect, you know? I mean, there's always some vector in. There always is.
Hmm.
You know, that's why the theoretically, and by legislation... the nation's nuclear power plants are not supposed to be connected to the internet.
Right.
Apparently, that's not always true.
And what about military and everything else? Is that its own separate network, or is that routed over
the
same...
Well, they're supposed to have their own separate network, but, we see people all the time playing World of Warcraft on their systems. So our question to you, should the president or anybody be able to kill the internet, even if it were possible to do? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I'm going to read one.
You got an email?
I'm going to read an email. That's what I'm going to do. Maybe. Is this a good email? I think it might be.
We'll find out.
Ted from Churchville has Windows XP. More than a gig of RAM. I have Windows XP with Service Pack 3 and all the updates are current. My computer no longer sees my standard floppy disk drive. I saw the following link. He links to the
knowledge base there.
Knowledge base question followed the directions. I checked the three register entries. They look fine. The upper and lower filter entries are not there on starting and restart. The standard floppy disk drive is reinstalled, but when I reopen and look at it, it's still not there. Any suggestions? Should I delete the three entries, uninstall the managed devices? Look, I don't know where your standard floppy disk drive is, but it may just simply well be dead.
That's very possible.
And that's the most likely scenario here. Floppy disk drives, if you can find them, are pretty cheap.
Still seen them, I think, floating around next to the telephone analog modems that you can get your machine.
Very few folks use them anymore. The flash drives. Flash drives are just so
I'm
much.
I'm sure you can still order one maybe through Newegg or through, you know, Dave or another shop in town.
Dave, here's another business idea for you. Have you ever done this? Somebody will just bring in a stack of floppies and say, here are all my floppies. Write them to a CD instead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I had a guy bring in literally a whole box full of 5 1/4.
Okay.
And, I said, here, and he brought me a pack of 25, CDs, brand new CDs. It all fit on one.
I was going to say, yeah.
Because each one had, a couple Word documents.
360K on each one.
Yeah, and I filled it up. He goes, oh, you had enough CDs? I says, I only needed one, and there's still tons of room on this one.
Right.
He goes, you're kidding.
So even
all
if
these?
Those, even if those discs were full, it would take four of them to make a meg, and a gigabyte, which would be a tiny flash drive, would hold 1,000 of those.
Yeah.
So 4,000 5 1/4 floppies fit on that.
Yeah.
Right. I have a 1 gig flash drive in my pocket at this moment, as a matter of fact.
I can beat you there. I've got an 8.
Well, I've got an 8 on my keychain.
Touche. Touche, my friend.
Yeah, but like you say, there's not many folks that still have a five and a quarter little, you know, floppies around.
Yeah.
That I've still got one, and I've had to keep it pretty well, you know, in a bag and that, and oiled up, because that what happens is on those old drives, they had an old belt.
Yep. Right? Yeah.
And those belts get stretched out. So every so often, I take that off, and I keep it with this diving mask spray. So it stays lubricated,
oh,
so it doesn't
nice.
Get dried out. And then that way it'll stay lubricated and it still spins up and I can still use it.
That's a very clever idea. But, Ted, I would suggest that you either invest in a new floppy disk drive.
Yeah, start there. Probably someplace you online it, you can get it.
Right, you can get it internally or externally, a USB based floppy drive from somewhere like Newegg is only $23. So. And that's, you know.
But thinking long term, might be time to shy right. away from the floppies.
Exactly, exactly. What you want to do in the long run is not use floppies.
Because at a certain point, that magnetic media is just not going to be readable.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, you're going to orphan all your data that
it's
way.
It's just essentially a coating of rust on a piece of plastic.
Yep.
And eventually that's not going to work. So you want to move all your data off of that, put it in something electronic. Certainly back it up on CDs or a DVD, put it on flash drives, keep it on your hard drive.
Right.
But not on, I mean,
Or take it over to Dave.
I can't think of I can't think of a reason to keep it on a floppy drive. I can't think of a reason.
Security. Nobody else can get at it.
That's, including him now. Exactly.
Well, that's even more secure, right?
But if you really have to have a floppy drive or you really just want a floppy drive, buy a new one. I think that's going to solve your problem.
All right.
You can even, and in fact, like I said, get a USB one and then you can move it from machine to machine as you buy new computers.
Yeah, that's probably the way to go.
Yeah, I suspect that'll probably be better.
What else is going on?
Craig.
Okay.
Craig from Rochester. I live too far off the avenue to receive the free Wi-Fi available from local commercial firms there. Is there a high-gain antenna available or any other solution that offers these services without me having to get out and get close? Since there's no antenna plug, I imagine there's a repeater that receives Wi-Fi signals and rebroadcasts to my adjacent desktop. What frequency and type of signal is Wi-Fi? I simply love your show. Thanks for doing it. I've got a poor speaking voice. Comfortable. So email works for me. Craig, thanks for writing. The deal is, if in fact they are providing true local free Wi-Fi, then that's great. But if what little I actually know about Wi-Fi is that the power has to come from their end. Having a terrific receiver on your end is not useful if you're outside the zone of broadcast from the sender. It doesn't matter how good your receiver is.
Yeah, it's all about sensitivity on the receiving end and about power on the sending end.
Exactly. Wi-Fi comes in two frequency formats. 2.5 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz are the most common two versions that are out there. So I suspect that those free Wi-Fis that are out there from those merchants are one of those two.
Isn't there something like, it's like Cantenna.com or Cantenna.org? I don't know if we could look those up or something like that sells specifically either plans to build your own, or they sell pre-assembled homebrew sensitive equipment that you could then plug into your stuff. In terms of like commercially available stuff, I haven't seen an awful lot of that. Typically, Wi-Fi is being used on premises just because of its signal range in general.
Right. You're right, Cantenna.com. You can buy a Cantenna. But again, that's for the sending end.
Okay.
Right? It's not going to help you on the receiving end. If the signal doesn't reach you at all, having a more powerful way to not get the signal isn't going to help you.
Well, is there a sensitivity if you can set that up on your end and then point it at the source?
No, it's all about boosting the range of the signal going out.
Craig may have to investigate this a little bit more. Also, it never hurts to go check out Wikipedia. Usually on stuff that isn't related to people or events, Wikipedia is a fairly credible source. especially for something as well defined as Wi-Fi. And then there's always, you know, if you get really, really into it, there's IEEE, which puts down the specifications for that sort of thing. But
right.
But Wikipedia would be a great way to get in, you know, in 10 minutes, get a great overview of what it would take, what the frequencies are, and so forth and so on.
Right. Can't hurt to try the Cantenna. It's only $30, which is certainly cheaper than actually buying your own Wi-Fi or buying your own internet connection.
Right. Yeah. Wasn't quite clear where he was deriving this signal from.
Well, he says he lives off the avenue, which I'm assuming is Monroe Avenue.
Could be.
Park Avenue. Some avenue. And Lyle Avenue. I don't know where he's living.
Who knows?
But he's just off the avenue, but he's so far off the avenue that he can't get the Wi-Fi signal. And there are a bunch of I know that certainly on Monroe and Park there are some places that provide free Wi-Fi.
Oh.
So you'll come there and drink or eat or do whatever it is you do in those places.
So he's trying to use that from his house?
And he's trying to get that signal from his house.
Okay.
Which he can't do.
Well, there might be some legal complications there.
Yeah.
Unless he's got some kind of agreement, I guess.
Right. You know, the idea is they provide that free service for people who are in their place.
Right.
And that you taking that free signal may not be legal.
Right.
We aren't lawyers. I don't even play one on television anymore. So we're not going to say you can or cannot do that legitimately.
I was listening to a show, and they were saying that it's really difficult to find free Wi-Fi in Europe because all of their connections are metered. So they don't,
right.
The coffee shop, they'll charge you a bit to use it while you're there. It's not just an enticement to get you to come and sit down and order some coffee and whip out your laptop and go surfing. So it's really interesting that there's such a cultural difference that is pushed just by the nature of it being metered. And I think about, you know, the couple of different times that we've had ISPs try to meter things here that locally haven't fully come to fruition yet. That could really change the landscape of what it's like to go to your favorite watering hole and expect Wi-Fi and
well, and what you're willing
there.
To do in your home.
Sure.
I mean, we're seeing that now already with phone vendors.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, when you only have a couple of gigs or 5 gigs a month.
Yep.
On the one hand, both Apple and Google are telling you, use your phone all the time. It can do everything. Use it constantly. It does great stuff.
Well, that's because they're not the phone. They're not the people selling
right.
the pipe.
Right,
the wireless.
Right, right. And then, you know, and you want to. I want to be able to sit at my phone and do what I want to do and not say, really, do I need to do this because I only get 5 gig a month? Or
suddenly you
got
to do that mental math and figure out, well, can I stream this movie this month or do I got to wait
Although
till next
I love
month?
All the ads for the Windows phones, which basically say, use our phone, buy our phone, you'll use it less.
Well, yeah, you won't spend as much time staring at it and flipping and flicking through and tapping.
Essentially,
and stuff.
You won't want to use our phone. I don't get that, but all right.
They're trying to, I think, position it as an efficiency thing, but
oh, okay.
Maybe they're not so specific. It sounds like we might have another caller.
Yeah, we do. We have Gil from Webster on the line. Welcome, Gil. What's your question?
Well, actually, I had a comment about the Wi-Fi.
Yes.
And that is that in actuality, there are antennas that will give you you know, better access from a distance. I mean, the antenna basically goes both ways. It goes for receiving and for transmitting. And
yeah, I was thinking about that while I was talking. There's really no difference.
In truth, I mean, you can get gain both ways. It's more the electronics that has to deal with the fact that it's going to be transmitting as well as receiving. But I have a friend on a boat who I think probably is testing the world's record for being able to get Wi-Fi from very remote locations because he, you know, logs into marinas and this and that and the other thing.
Yeah.
And that said, I think you're correct in the sense that there may be some sort of explicit or implicit contract that you're having with the free Wi-Fi supplier that says, hey, well, you know, if you're in my establishment, you can use my Wi-Fi. But on the other hand, if you're, you know, 3 miles away, not so good.
Right.
So, technically, just as a matter of technical issues, yeah, you can get a, there are lots of little dishes. If I had to cite a manufacturer, just off the top of my head, I think something like Kensington or something is, I believe, a device that he had, but I could be wrong. I mean, it was some sort of basically dish antenna kind of thing that would had quite a bit of gain. And the gain, of course, goes both ways, and both in transmitting and receiving. So he could be, you know, a goodly distance from the Wi-Fi site and still be able to use it. And
Right.
So there you go. Anyway, it was just a comment. And
no, it's good.
I think the ethical issues probably are ones that I guess I would search my soul for.
Right. The Wi-Fi distance record is hundreds and hundreds of miles. But again, it was set from the sender end, not
sure.
From the receiver end.
Well, so. I mean, no, I mean, there, you know, you can put antennas on both ends. I mean, your telephone transmissions and things, some of the things that are transmitted by ground microwaves, you'll see dishes on, you know, towers here and there, and what you'll find on the other end of this paraphernalia is there'll be another dish, and you know, basically they are two
right.
antenna systems that are aimed at each other, and they are coupled, and they can transmit and receive both directions, and so forth and so on. So if you really wanted to get the distance records, the hams being a ham, I guess the amateur radio operators have regularly do things like bounce signals off the moon and
right.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard about that.
And really the main difference between Wi-Fi and ham radio is, well, almost nothing.
Right.
They're both radio signals.
Yeah. I mean,
power levels.
I guess
right.
I would say that the difference is packaging.
Right.
Ham radio is not packaged for convenient and daily use, whereas, you know, Wi-Fi and stuff like that is packaged, and you plug it in, you turn it on, it's plug and go.
Right. And they do limit the power on those things. There was a model of the Linksys that everybody used to buy because it was the one where you could boost the power.
Right.
Yeah.
But now, yeah. So you're right. Craig could certainly buy that Cantenna. And if there's enough of a signal, if he's still getting signal, but it's too weak to register on his regular Wi-Fi, the Cantenna would fix that, would get that signal.
Right. So, I mean, if you wanted to get really technical and specific about it, Craig could make and or buy an antenna, and if he had a Wi-Fi contraption that had a connector on it, it's usually something that they would call an SMA connector or something like that.
Right.
That simply took an antenna. He could basically run a nice coax cable to an antenna that he could put in some place and point at the Wi-Fi site, and it would do both transmitting and receiving pretty much automatically, and it would improve his ability to access Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And it would be no trouble whatsoever, and if he can sleep with it, that's good.
Yeah, right.
take it as you see, and that's kind of the way it goes.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, guys. Keep doing the great job that you always do.
Thank you, sir. Have fun.
All
right, we're going
to
take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Bringing sexy back, Nick.
Bringing sexy back. Was it ever gone?
It's about time.
Yeah, for a time, it may have been. We're just looking at the Sound Bites caller map at soundbites.org/map.
I like that URL.
Thank you. We have the Soundbites caller map with the
got pins where everybody's
thousands
called in from.
Right.
Big, huge concentration around here locally, but all over the country and many places around the world, too.
Australia, Beijing, China.
Collect them all.
Somewhere on Hawaii. And of course, all you overseas people. I'm looking at you, Ireland, you, England, Belgium. Luxembourg, Norway,
South America too.
Sweden, South America.
Don't forget South America.
Well, but those are people who download the podcast.
Not likely to be callers.
But they should. They should. Well, I guess that would be Friday night, Saturday night. I don't know how that works.
Get a call from Rio. Have to brush up on my Portuguese.
See? I know no Portuguese.
Not Spanish, Nick.
I know no Spanish. I know no Portuguese. I can swear in Spanish.
Glad to hear it. We need some callers from Wyoming and Montana. And the
Colorado, yeah. Oregon, Washington, North and South Dakota. We are not, neither of the Dakotas is represented.
So who's going to be first is the question.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right.
Call in now. You could be first.
We have to see. We don't have anybody from Arkansas. We don't have anybody from Louisiana.
Okay.
We got somebody from, wait a minute. It's right on the border between Kansas and
Missouri. Yeah, where is that?
Joplin, Missouri. So we don't have anybody from Kansas.
Okay.
So unless, I don't know. But yeah, so call in. Is it the great, somebody from the great Navy of Kansas, the Kansas Navy? No, it's not. Who has the Navy? It's Nebraska. Nebraska has a Navy, I think it is. It's Nebraska.
The state?
Yeah.
An actual Navy?
The Navy of Nebraska. Yes, it's a landlocked state, but they have a Navy. I think it's Nebraska. One of them has.
It's like having a Coast Guard.
Where they got a major lake, they just punk a boat out and practice?
I don't know that there actually is a boat. I think they're just, they have a website. I know that. I can't remember. I think it's Nebraska has a website, the Nebraska Navy. Yeah, NN, the NebraskaNavy.com.
If you've heard about this and you're from Nebraska, give us a call and tell us about it. That's
Let's see. Nebraska Navy.
His fingers fly across the keyboard.
There you go. There's an admiral of Nebraska.
They're
the Nebraska Navy.
Up.
There you go. All right, we're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Joe in Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Howdy. Well, you were saying before, call in about the internet kill switch.
Yeah,
please.
That's well, absolutely horrible idea. I mean, if the government wants to disconnect itself from the internet, that's fine, but don't be messing around with my internet connection. I don't see why they have any right whatsoever to do with that. I mean, didn't we have a First Amendment to our Constitution somewhere that would prevent the government from doing something like that?
Well, the government prevents us from the First Amendment, I don't believe, gives you the right to...
The internet wasn't part of it.
Speak anywhere at any time. It
essentially, it gives you the right to criticize the government. You know, you have to think back to what the amendment, what
and that's
in
just
what
ongoing.
In an era when you couldn't say anything about the king, and you come and form a new country, and what are the things you're going to set up? You say, well, you know, remember that thing about the king? Let's put up a rule that says you're allowed to say whatever you want about the government, and so forth and so on. You know, much like this call coming in. To talk about it.
And you know, I don't know if you've looked at that official report about what happened in Egypt. I don't believe that was a single data center, a single breaker. It's like that seems to me to be ridiculous. I mean, also just this, our wonderful Department of Homeland Security, they did another few domain seizures, and it turns out, oh, we made a mistake. They ended up shutting down like 84,000 subdomains that were being used at
they were looking for child porn.
.com.
Right, they were looking for childporn.com and instead of just, and I'm all for that, by the way, shut them down.
Yep.
Shut them down. I'll be personally out there with that with that dull spoon to do whatever needs to be done to them in public. I don't have a problem with that, believe me. But what they did was, rather than take down the one place, they took down the DNS server for that one place.
Punish.
Well, and if you're
so
going to take something
sites.
Down, I mean, that's effective and fast, but it's the baby with the bathwater problem, right?
Yeah.
But worse, right? And there were 84,000 sites using that DNS server. Rather than just shutting them down, what happened was every single one of them was redirected to a page that had the Homeland Security seal on it, the ICE seal on it, and it said, taken down because of child porn.
Uh-huh.
Which now means your little, you know, site
Mom
where you sell.
Store.
Right, exactly. Everybody
Suffers.
Thinks you're a child pornographer.
Guilt by association.
Guilt by association. So even when they say, oh, we're sorry, and they put you back, there's nothing that says, hey, we're the government and we were wrong. You just come back up again, so you still have the reputation of being a child pornographer,
and they wonder,
even though you had nothing to do with it. Now, that's where it's wrong.
Or folks also can put the stigma in there. Well, if this site was infected, am I going to get infected? You know, wind up
using it. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Get child porn down there and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, get it loaded on their machine. But what folks have to remember, though, and this, you know, we've seen this here in Rochester, child porn, they do not send emails out, you know, asking you to join them. You've got to go looking.
No, I'm not for it. Believe me.
Yeah. No. I know that. But we've discussed this before because other folks have sat there and said, oh, no, I get an email from them. No. Never happened. Never happened. And I'll stake my house on it.
Yep.
I mean, look at how easy it was to convince this one judge to issue the warrant that allowed the Department of Homeland Security to take this down. And we're going to have legislators and the president playing with that huge complex system. I don't think any one of them is technically adept enough to do something that serious.
Right. The truth really is that our government officials are not well versed in the workings of the intertubes, and so consequently,
and they're operating from a position of fear, not from a position of understanding.
I certainly don't mean to whitewash all our politicians. I'm sure there are some honest ones somewhere, but in a lot of cases, it's who's got the deepest pockets. And what do they want done?
Well, especially when they sit there and throw around stupid stuff. Like you said, they create this rule to create the thing, then turn around and undo it. I'm sorry. When it comes to the internet, it's like one hand clapping that they think they're going to control the whole internet. It's called the World Wide Web. Well, if they haven't been tuned into that yet, and until they get Al Gore's permission, since he's the inventor of it, you know, to do this and that, it ain't going to happen. I mean, they can legislate all they want, but they're not going to, you know, take care of all these other third world countries that are putting up stuff and everything else.
Even if they flip the switch in Egypt, there were people in Egypt who were literally going back to their dial-up modems and dialing up internet service through other countries over long-distance phone lines.
Well, Australia was having that, too. I mean, a number of my friends down in Australia were getting really upset because all of a sudden there was going to be all this big control and they were going to dictate where they could go and can't go and all this other stuff. And they just did up an uproar, and it was like they felt they got the politicians to get their head out of their butts.
The politicians, essentially, they don't want to be the fall guy when something bad happens and we've experienced it, and then we start to analyze what happened. The politicians don't want to be in a position where they say, oops, you know, I probably could have done something, but I didn't, and I wasn't sure
why. They want to be in the position of being seen as leaders.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to be a leader, you have to do something.
You have to be proactive, not reactive.
Right. For most of them, leadership consists of figuring out which way the mob is running, running to the front of the mob and yelling, follow me.
And make sure the camera's on you.
Right. But they do want to be seen as leading, and therefore, you know, you have to do something. And if being able to kill the internet is the hot topic, they jump on that bandwagon. And then when enough people come and say, you know, that's a bad idea, then they jump on the other bandwagon.
Well, yeah. And the bottom line for guys like us, Nick and Dave, is that if we want to get on the internet, we'll find a way.
We'll always find a way.
Doesn't matter who's shutting what off.
Well, actually, it is technically feasible to kind of kill the whole internet, or at least the pieces of the internet at once. There's an awful lot of trust that goes on between the independent carriers, AT&T, Level 3, Comcast, and whatever, BGP. If the government through mandate or manages somehow to get into that inner circle, they could just black hole whole sections, addresses, complete networks, it doesn't matter. They could shut things down pretty effectively if they have access to BGP.
Right, and I agree with that. But the reality is that I can also, if that happens, I can make a phone call to some friends in Canada who will gladly set up a relay for me.
They'd have to kill all the phones with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, there's...
All right,
thanks
for your attention today,
guys. Thank you. Appreciate that. But the reality is that for the technically savvy, there will be ways around it. And there's no question of that. So we'll find out at some point, I suppose. I hope we never find out. But
yeah. I don't think it'll happen.
If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. We'll see. It's a long road before I think we get to that point.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I mean, I want to think that, but never say never.
Right, exactly. So we'll see, you know. And then there are the people who are reliant on the phone system. I mean, if they shut down the internet, we go to our phones. They shut down the phones.
Ham radio.
We go to ham radio. They shut down the ham. I mean,
you can't shut down ham radio. Yeah, you got a generator.
That's exactly right.
All the electricity, it's the airwaves out there. And
they can't jam them all.
No, skipping them.
And, of course, you can do internet over ham radio if you want to.
Yep, packet radio. It's not fast, but it works.
It doesn't have to be fast at that point. It just has to work.
You're not doing it for YouTube. You know, you're doing it for a text message.
That's exactly right. yeah, packet radio. And, of course, all our local hams are probably all screaming at the radios right now. Ham radio, we got you in there, and you guys are the saviors, man. When there's a disaster, you're the first ones who are there, and I suspect if there is a civil problem, you'll be the first ones there as well. I hope our hams never, ever die. And no, I'm still not going to get my license. All right. Exactly. We're done for another week. You've wasted two entire hours of your life listening to this show. I don't know what you think of every week, but thank you for thinking of it. I really want to thank Dennis Worster, who stepped in as Steve is off doing whatever Steve is doing. I want to thank Dave Enright for having actually managed to remember to come here. I'm Nick Francesco. We will see you next week on the longest-running computer show in the whole universe, Soundbites, right here. And George is coming in. He's going to be great with Linda on member-supported Jazz 90.1.